Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Steve O'Shea is a media dream. Not only is he amenable, chatty, and refreshingly down-to-earth for a scientist, his main passion involves that terror of the deep, the giant squid. So when Steve set out last month to be the first in the world to grow squid in captivity, just the little ones to begin with at least, it made news around the world. I went to visit Steve in his office at Auckland University and found him sharing his little room with a massive tank of juvenile cephalopods, or baby squid.
Now, are these giant squid?
Heavens no. If I had giant squid in the office, I'd be the happiest man in the world. This is what we call a guinea pig squid, in the sense that I'm just proving to everyone, and I've got some balls to actually do this, to put this online, that you can keep these animals alive in captivity. And this particular species of squid, this is broad squid, or Sepiatuthis australis. People overseas in the States have taken eggs from New Zealand and Australia, the same species in Australia, and they've tried to keep these animals alive. Nobody has been able to do it. And the secret to keeping them alive is providing them a live food source for their first 120 days. And the food source, or what they're actually eating, varies tremendously over that period of time. So I'm fortunate in having surveyed most of the Greater Auckland region. I know exactly where to find a particular food for these animals at a particular stage of their life cycle.
So I can see something. I can see a little fish in there at the moment. Is that right?
That's something I probably shouldn't have in captivity because it's illegal to do so. That's mosquito fish. It's an introduced fish. It's right throughout all of our waterways. It's probably a little large for these squid at this point in time, but it's proven to be an ideal food source for these animals after about 40 days. So, as long as we can get sufficient numbers of that, we're fine. They survive for about 2 or 3 days in here, but by that point in time, they've been eaten anyway.
So you say these are broad squid. Is this the squid that we'd eat in a restaurant? Or?
This is probably one of the most tasty squid you can get. And I do eat squid, but, you know, the purpose of doing this is not to grow these up in captivity to eat them. Yeah. Mm.
But squid aren't at the moment, there's no squid that are bred or that are farmed for food?
It's true. There are no squid that have been bred for food. The amount of time and work that's involved in keeping these animals alive would probably render commercial squid rearing prohibitively expensive.
So even if you do crack this, it's not going to happen.
there's possibly a niche market for it, I suppose. You know, I've done a lot of commercial fishing in my time, and if you get a fresh squid come up on the deck, and of course it's dead, you know, but and you cook that up there and then, the taste of that squid leaves anything that's been processed or has been frozen for dead. It's not really something that I would condone, you know, going along to a restaurant and saying, I want to eat that squid, and then having it pulled out and chopped up. But I can assure you that the taste is phenomenal.
So how did you go about catching these squid here?
These came from eggs that had washed up on a beach, in which case they would have died anyway. So each cluster of eggs are like grapes, white grapes, and each cluster of eggs would probably have in the order of 300 developing embryos in them. So we just whipped them into the tank here. I had no intention of doing this. The last time I'd done this was 5 years ago, and you get exhausted when you're keeping these animals alive. But the opportunity presented itself. We went out, we got the eggs, we put them in the tank here, and bingo, you know, they're doing the rest of it.
So we're in your office right now, which is, I don't know, maybe sort of 3.5 metres square thereabouts, or 3x4, and you've got massive big saltwater tanks. I don't know, is the landlord happy about that?
I don't. Thankfully, it's a university, but I'm a bit concerned about some of the electrics in here because you've got a lot of salt creep going on, and all of the equipment that we've got here you'll see is plastic, apart from some of the chiller units. Salt water is very hard on offices, very hard. I've had a couple of accidents here where I've actually flooded the room because it's a precarious thing that we're doing here. I know you'd really have to see it, but there's a basically a 100-litre sump and a 400-litre tank, and I've got hoses going left, right and centre, and pumps and chillers and what have you, and all it takes is one person to knock that, me to have had a drink in the evening, which I'm prone to doing, do something that I shouldn't do, go on home, and my God, I come back in the next morning and we have an accident.
Is the plan for you, I mean, you're associated, you know, most commonly with the giant squid, you know, you are the giant squid man. Is the plan for you one day to try and do this with giant squid?
Hopefully this year we're going to get another opportunity to do that. The last time I did this was in 2000, and I caught 17 juvenile giant squid. And at that point in time, nobody knew how to keep these animals alive in captivity. The longest anyone had ever been able to keep any deep-sea species of squid alive in captivity was 17 days, and I ended up taking it up to about 150 days before the animals bred and then died in my tanks. That was in what you'd call a series of trial surveys before we embarked on the big giant squid search. I caught the giant squid, I had 8 3,200-litre polyethylene tanks welded into the hull of a boat. I was at sea for about 27 days. Huge nets that we had out there. I kept the animals in darkness because, you know, we were collecting them at night at that point in time, and these are animals of the deep. So we took all the light out. We put them to polyethylene. And when you start looking at the costs associated with catching these animals, enormous costs, I put very small prey in there. And everything died on me. And, of course, I went into what I would probably think were several years of mental breakdown, hiding in closets, not really wanting to show myself because the documentary came out. You know, I burst into tears. Everything died on me. You know, the squid man can't even keep a squid alive. So after a few years, I wanted to find out what I did wrong. So I started experimenting with a few other squid, and we've learned a phenomenal amount since then. Namely, polyethylene kills squid. And I had 3,200-litre tanks. They need light to feed. You know, they're not actually worried about light. I can have light on in here 24/7, and they don't care about that. And also, they're eating prey that's 1 to 1.5 times their own size. So I just have to make sure I don't put too much prey in that tank, because prey becomes predator very quickly. So I'm pretty sure now that if we were to go out again and capture that juvenile giant squid, we can keep it alive. And that's what this is all about.
And so have you got a date for that?
Let's just say perhaps August, September, October of this year.
Now, when you go out to try and capture a giant squid, so you're not diving or anything like that. You're just you're throwing nets over and hoping. Is that how it works?
It is pretty much a game of patience, and the sort of nets that we're using, we tow at about 1 meter's depth on the very surface of the ocean. They're incredibly fine, incredibly delicate, and I would tow them for no more than 5 minutes. Now, the objective here is not to collect lots of animals, but to collect a few animals in very good condition that haven't been damaged. But it is pretty much, very much a game of patience, and in the course of a night, or over the course of a night, I would probably deploy those nets 100, 150 times.
So they're not deep sea animals?
The juveniles, we have 86 species of squid in New Zealand waters, and the juveniles of almost all of those species of squid occur in the very shallow waters, right in the upper 1 or 2 centimetres, in fact. So you don't need a big boat to do it, but you do need the big boat to be several hundred kilometres offshore. That's where it comes in, the costs come into this. But very shallow water, and then they descend, as they mature, they descend through the water column down to depths of about 400 metres in the case of the giant squid. Now, the only reason it's descending is because that's where the next food source for it is. So if there was sufficient food for it in the shallows, they'd be up in the shallows. They don't have a closed circulatory system like you and I do. Like if we were to go down with an air tank on our back, do a bit of scuba and then come up too fast, we get air bubbles forming in our arteries. And that's when you get the bends, of course. These animals don't have that fine capillary network. They can go up and down. Pressure is not an issue. It's actually the temperature shock if you were trying to bring something up from about 400 meters.
And so you mentioned cost a couple of times. Do you find it easier than some people would to get funding because of the nature of what you're working with here, the giant squid?
It is a pretty sensational sort of animal. And at least every 2 years I'm involved in some sort of big expedition that's funded by either National Geographic or Discovery. But it's never easy getting money, and I don't actually invest much of my time and energy trying to generate money. I've got other responsibilities these days, so people generally knock on my door and they say, hey, do you want to go and do this? And I say, yay, well, let's go ahead and do that. You know, I'd love to raise some money to go down to the Antarctic to try and get the colossal squid on film, but I simply am not going to invest a year of my time trying to generate the probably $3 or $4 million that's required to do that. That's a phenomenal amount of money. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather see that money personally invested into more important areas of science, particularly those that lead to conservation of our marine resources. But these are definitely the hook that we use to to lure people into conservation.
Last week, in fact, you were at whale stranding, is that correct?
We've had, since December 26, 4 mass strandings of pilot whales in New Zealand. We had them at Colville out there on Coromandel, Port Levy down Banks Peninsula, Farewell Spit, and last week Stewart Island. So we do travel around New Zealand attending all of these strandings, and we have to make the most out of a bad situation. We come in after people have tried to save them, okay? And so I've got a dead animal on the beach. We're trying to reconstruct the life histories of the whales, and the link between the whale and the squid is that these toothed whales are eating squid. And we are concerned about the amount of squid that are out there these days due to a number of impacts, you know, human-induced impacts out there. And we are concerned that we might be seeing a shift in the diet of the whale, moving from fish, which they historically ate, to squid these days. And then with the loss of squid in New Zealand waters, perhaps that contributing to hunger, which leads these animals inshore. But having said that, having attended many hundreds of strandings, you know, dealt with many hundreds of whales over the course of the last few years, the whales down at Stewart Island were probably the most healthy of those that we have so far looked at, and that the stomachs of them were absolutely distended with squid. We have never seen anything like this in our lives, so it was probably misadventure, that case, that stranding. Other strandings that we've looked at, extreme ulceration of the stomachs. So there's some bad things going on out there.
So the answer is we still don't know, but there's probably not one reason why whales strand.
Many, many reasons will contribute to an individual whale stranding. So, you know, Colville will have been different from Stewart Island, which would have been different from Farewell Spit.
Now, just finally, just as we're looking in this tank, how many squid are in here?
I would hazard a guess at around about 40 or 50. It might not look like that, but you want to try and catch them, and half of them are invisible. So,
okay, and they're a month old now. You're aiming for what? You just keep on going as long as you can?
For something like this, because they are growing and they're now eating high-protein diet like fish, they're going to really explode in growth. I'm going to have to thin this out even more. I think we'll get them up to around the 170, 200 days, no problem, at which point in time they keel over naturally.
Oh, is that what? That's their lifespan?
They're very short. They're boom and bust. So, yeah, very short lifespan on these.
So maybe a little bit of a barbecue at your place in 90 days?
I think I'll be releasing them, honestly, with a few tears when the last one goes.
All right. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Damien.
And good luck.
Cheers.
Well, since doing that interview earlier in the week, I received a call from Steve O'Shea saying that he'd been shut down by MAF. Apparently, the National Animal Ethics Advisory Committee wrote to him saying that his work constitutes a manipulation under the Animal Welfare Act and should have been subject to animal ethics approval. So, presumably, poor Steve has to flush those guys down the drain, but I'm sure it won't be the last we'll hear from him. Coming up after the break, citizen journalism and Ryan McPhun.